the moderator of the Spertus Critical Conversation series launch, the renowned journalist, formerly White House correspondent and anchor for CNN, and he joins us on WGN. Hi, Frank. It's John. You're on the air. How are you?
Great, John. Thank you so much for having me.
So this is the first one. Have they done these elsewhere? It sounds like this is the first time it's happened in Chicago.
To start, this is the inaugural, and I'm very, very much looking forward to it.
So will it always be the two of them, or will there be other speakers from different perspectives?
No, I think I'm sure they're going to be looking for other people to rotate in. This is the beginning, though, and the idea is to get two prominent people, as you say, who come from opposing places, and to try to engage them in constructive conversation, dynamic dialogue, and probably some debate, probably not a little debate along the way, but, you know, really with the idea of can we reach beyond the sort of sound-bitten world that we're in all the time and do better than this? You know, we are a country that can do better than this. So how do we start when we're coming in a time of such polarization and division?
Who's going to pick the topics and questions?
Well, we've talked about it broadly amongst ourselves, and we've communicated with both of them, and we want some of these really big, tough, grinding issues that we've got now, but we want to make sure that what we don't do, which happens too much in some public and media town halls and debates, is to have such a laundry list of issues that you can spend, 3.7 seconds on each. We'd like to have a little bit more deliberate and deliberative conversation. So we'll talk about the issue of school safety and guns. That is very prominent. We will certainly talk about immigration because that is who we are and it's defining where we're going. And there are a couple of issues that really, engage the world, whether it's climate change and some foreign policy issues. But again, not a laundry list of things, but some where we really want to sink our teeth. First among them, school safety, guns, and immigration.
Maybe school safety would not have been on there a week ago. In fact, the day before the event, you may want to call an audible, right?
Well, interestingly, we did talk about this, and we were very... we felt very strongly that this is an issue because this is what we really want to do is we want to take a look at what are some very polarizing issues, but issues that we need to move past polarization and toward solution if anything's going to change. And, immigration, for example, has been an issue that's been confronting this country for years. I was covering the White House, when we had the last immigration bill in the 1980s, of all things. Yes, I was 4 years old, but I was a terrific 4-year-old.
Yeah.
But it's been a very long time since we did that. President George W. Bush tried, came close, and failed. And meanwhile, the problem gets worse and worse, and people are frightened on all sides, and they're looking for solutions on all sides. So what can we do about that? And guns, of course, has been a serious problem for a long time. The pain only gets worse. Florida only made the tragedy deeper. What does that change? And what will it take? And what can happen for us to address this like adults?
Yeah, maybe you've got some advice for me, because to be honest with you, I think the idea of arming teachers is so cockamamie. I don't know if I could host a two-sided conversation about that.
It's really complicated. We see some of the governors, bringing to the White House, right, directly to the president, a very strong and articulate sense that teachers do not want to be carrying, many teachers anyway, or expressing to them that they are not law enforcement officers. They should not be carrying weapons. Parents do not want to be sending their children places where there are guns. But there are other teachers who say, now, hang on a second. You know, my gun can be like a fire extinguisher. And my son, who taught in Philadelphia schools, tough schools, is torn on it himself because he has seen things up close and personal. So I think it's a complicated issue, and it's one that bears, again, adult conversation to really understand it, where we can step back and say what should be happening. Clearly, there should be, security and resource officers who do what they need to do, who are trained in how to use guns, but there are also teachers who are already trained. Is that viable? That's the question that we should ask, and that's the question that we need to explore, setting some of our biases and ideologies to the side if we really want a great answer on it.
Well, just engage me for a second here. 20% of the teachers? And what does trained mean? I mean, so they know how to operate a firearm?
Exactly.
Are you telling me that a weekend class or a series of classes will take a grade school teacher and make them a viable option in tactics, in taking down an intruder, I will die never believing that. It's just too crazy a scenario. I wonder what universe the president is living in that he has in mind all of these ex-military men and women who are going to be teaching the kids. And as soon as something goes pop, pop, they take the sicko, as the president calls him, out. I just don't think that's a logical idea.
It's very problematic on a lot of different levels. I mean, you're also going to need new levels of background checks if you're going to have teachers carrying weapons in schools, right? I mean, God knows bad things happen, but if bad things happen and someone's got a gun, it can be a worse thing. And you enter all sorts of new worlds of unintended consequences, right, that we can't even think about. The clear answer is you keep guns out of schools, right? It's like, you know, should pilots be armed in planes? You know, you have similar kinds of conversations about these sorts of things. So we have to be very careful. You end up with an arms race, right? And then you just have more and more weapons. On the other hand, think about how defenseless everybody was in that school in Florida, and so, yeah.
Right. Right. So
I can tell you this as the question also should be put to parents. Do you want to send your children to school when if the teachers are armed?
Well, that's the Republican response, because the answer to that should be, well, let's leave that to the local level. If a local school district decides, yeah, we do want that, I mean, I don't know exactly how you calculate that vote. Maybe you put it up to the parents, maybe you put it up to the faculty, probably the school board. But I mean, if at a local level they decide, yeah, we want here in Arkansas to arm our teachers because we're more comfortable with that than we are in, say, Chicago, then maybe they should have the right to do so. And then I'll just have to change states or go to a private school or something, you know?
This is what's going to be so interesting to hear these two governors about, right?
Yeah, right.
Because they come
right.
from such different backgrounds, such different perspectives, and such different states. They have different, very different populations, both states diverse in different ways. And so, you're the governor. You're responsible for the safety of your children and your teachers. What do you do, and how do you navigate the unintended consequences? And how do you create the consensus that's going to be necessary so the place just doesn't go, just flip out because you either are or not bringing guns into school? And are we really making our children safer? That's the fundamental question. What do we do to make our children safer? And how do they, as public officials, if we're going to have this conversation, this really difficult conversation, how do they, as public officials, do that when we are so confused and divided?
By the way, all of this ignores the fact that if we decide that guns in schools are a better way to protect people in schools, what about hospitals? What about movie theaters? What about concerts, right? I mean,
Totally correct. I've had the opportunity to do some work with Homeland Security and look at some of these things, and these are called soft targets. And the sad fact is that you harden one target, then you go, that someone who's intent on sowing this horrific destruction can easily go to the next, and everybody in their normal day knows what it's like because they visited 10 soft targets, whether you're going to the grocery store or the library or anywhere else. So what does that mean? And I remember being in some places where terrorism is a problem, and there is somebody checking bags and an armed guard at virtually every front door of virtually every place. Is that what we're heading toward? Is that what we want? Is that what we need?
Frank Sesno is on a phone line. You remember that name, don't you? And probably face two. Former White House correspondent and CNN anchor for how long? How long were you a White House correspondent for CNN?
Oh, gosh. I was a White House correspondent for 7-plus years at CNN. I was with CNN altogether for 21, so it was a really amazing time.
Would you want to be a White House correspondent today? Would you want to be there every day when Mike Huckabee's daughter is doing the press briefings?
Well, I would. There's a curiosity, of course, that says, yes, of course you'd like to be there. But I think that actually, and answering you seriously, no, I'm not sure that I would be. I think that what has happened in the coverage of the White House, and a lot of places actually, is they have been so infected by the demands of digital media and constant expectation, and social media of cranking it out, that we have to ask whether we are serving our audiences well with that, and whether and how we can get some more deliberative coverage, to where it's necessary. You know, these issues, like we were just talking about, are more polarizing, more divided, and more complex than they've ever been, and yet the pressure on coverage is more rapid than it's been. So I'm not sure I would want to be doing that in that way today. If I were covering the White House, I would only cover it, you know, if I could afford not to have a paycheck. If I could say, you know, sorry, I'm not going to do every little increment every 3 seconds. We need to figure out a way to bring people context, not just sound bites.
Yeah. Well, that's a challenge for people like me. I mean, and I'm not even a journalist. I'm a talk show host. I can see journalism from here, but I don't adhere to or have to the same sort of principles. Opinion tends to govern what I do. And I think the problem with CNNs of the world, and let's just mention CNN here for a second, is that they lean too much like I do and not enough like they should. If the president gives a speech and we can almost factually determine that it was filled with errors or was unlike any other speech a president has given before, I don't think it serves CNN to run an article that says top 10 crazy things Trump said during his address. But they do that, and then you click through each one of them. It's digital gold, and it might even be true, but I think it belies a bias that doesn't do them or anybody any good.
I think we live in a world of clickbait now where everything is measured, and the number of clicks and eyeballs and the time spent viewing and circulation, or what has replaced circulation, which is sort of the digital count in the old newspaper world. Everybody is subject to this now, and these are the metrics by which your advertising dollars and your attention are determined. And that I think that when, you know, one of the most disturbing things I've heard is the President of the United States saying the media are the enemy. When there are real enemies out there, and the media, whether we like them or not, and by the way, Thomas Jefferson did not like them very much, but still said, given a choice between a republic and a newspaper, I'll take the newspaper, you know, knowing that people need to be informed. But when you play that role, just like you said, when you play that role, you kind of become the enemy. Right. You know, when you are name calling, when you are throwing labels like that. So I'd like to see some more restraint all around. But, you know, is that going to happen in the world we're in now and how money is made? I'm not terribly optimistic about that.
All right. Well, I'm going to when I get to be king, and Frank, the paperwork is tied up in an office here in Cook County. But when I get to be,
that. I think we can get that loose. We can jar that loose. This is a job you should have.
No, because you haven't heard the end of this sentence. When I get to be king, comma, I'm going to put you in charge of the coverage, because I like everything you've said. So you've been drafted back into service, sir.
And okay, and if I mess up, it'll be off with my head, because you'll be the king. So that's easy.
Works for me. Frank Sesno is the CNN Washington Bureau Chief, formerly anyway. And what are you doing when you're not doing this then?
I am now the director of the School of Media and Public Affairs at George Washington University here in D.C., and so I am working with the next generation of storytellers and helping them put their brains around just exactly what we're talking about and what the new world of media that they're going to go in and be part of, and we hope lead, is going to look like, and how we're going to get there. I need to leave you and your listeners with a shred of optimism here, because I actually have it. And that is, you know, human beings are hunters and gatherers, and I think we're also hunters and gatherers of information. And in the end, we're going to know what information is going to help us hunt and gather well. And it's looking different, and it's going to continue to look different, and that's okay. We're never going to have Walter Cronkite again. Not going to happen. And so for you know, our students to come out and be the next you or the next me and manage that in what I refer to as three-dimensional journalism, all these different kinds of storytelling and technology platforms, that's what they're going to do. And they're doing some amazing things. So, you know, we'll see. It's going to be different. It's going to be uncomfortable for a while. I hope it's going to get us to a place where people can get the information they need to be informed.
Lucky the students at George Washington, Frank Sesno's there, and he'll be in Chicago on a stage with Jennifer Graham, two-term governor of Michigan, helped turn that state around after the crash, and Mike Huckabee, who is a Republican, she's a Democrat, one of the longest-serving governors in that state's history, a famous conservative and a famous father, Mike Huckabee, Jennifer Graham, and Frank Sesno on stage. You want details on that, go to spurtus.edu/conversation. The program is going to be on South Michigan Avenue, downtown Chicago, at 4:30 in the afternoon. And the date on that is not in front of my eyeballs. It is the 18th of March. There it is. Thank you, Elif. Sunday, March 18th at 4:30. Good luck to you. I hope we can meet in studio sometime. I sure appreciate your time, Frank.
I'd love that. Thanks so much, and good luck to you.